And we're
67.
And we're back
before you.
Welcome to Deep Thinking, the only motorcycle road racing podcast that challenges the aspect ratio that's on the side of your tire. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. Is it time for me to make le-suspension.com? Is it time for me to make a comment about the French nature of your suspension or
No, that's lame already.
I know.
Your friend has a hang-up. He needs to deal with it.
But it comes back.
No French connection other than this crazy
French,
guy.
And the French connection.
That was a... What do we call those things?
It was a callback.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Non sequitur? Brain fart? Oh, my God. Anyway, he's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering.
Let him go.
It
wasn't time bombs.
Time travel?
No.
Jesus Christ. Have Ed tweak your knobs. I'm Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
Easter egg,
right? And parked at the apex of a racetrack.
Yeah, you need to stop with that self-deprecation stuff. If you were parked, you wouldn't be moving. You're not doing that.
That's how good I am, Ed.
No, that just means the film speed, the shutter speed was too fast, and it traps it.
So good.
One of the keys to being truly good at anything is confidence.
Yes.
And so practicing deprivation is the opposite. Okay, it works for the British. It doesn't work for the Americans.
Self-depreciation. And believe me, when I pull my helmet on, I'm completely convinced that I can beat somebody else.
That's all that matters. There's my example right there. Somebody else.
Last time it worked, Ed.
I'm not sure you fully understand the aspect of this.
Ooh, good. Nice.
Good as my one about the squares.
That was brilliant. For those of you who aren't on our email chain, Ed said, we're at Ed's shop, the Lindemann Engineering shop, Sunday morning, because where else are we going to be? And
ended it with the classic, be there or be square.
And I said, what do you got against squares?
And I said,
go ahead.
Because squares keep multiplying by themselves.
And I said that was genius.
And Robert Roos said it was a groaner.
A groaner.
Which is the definition of a great punch.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a way homer.
I have a Facebook friend.
You get it on the way home.
Who is, you know, right now on Facebook, there's these computer bots that are sending out ridiculous friend requests.
Okay.
They steal a picture of a hot chick somewhere.
Okay.
They got no main picture. They got no posts. It's, right? And so now everybody's on to it. And hopefully we've all gone back and deleted all of those that we recognize. Anyway, some guy posted up that he got one and the girl's name was Ketchup.
Dude, I like it.
I had to post that this was the best pun thread ever. Because there was every single, hope you can catch up, you know, can you cut the mustard, blah, blah, blah. It was an excellent one. Hey, what's going on in the world?
Life, the universe, and deep thinking.
Why is there crackers, cheese, sausage, and champagne sitting there on my bike table? Do you know?
I have no idea, Ed. Tell me why there is crackers,
because
cheese,
Eric
sausage.
And Anita.
Eric, who are Eric and Anita?
Or Anita and Eric, if you prefer.
I do.
Dropped off Anita's race bike.
Okay.
125 RS.
Ooh.
Here. It's that one over there.
Nice.
You can't see it because it's covered.
Nice.
For suspension stuff.
Yeah.
And they brought their two dogs along. I wish I could remember their names. One was Moto and the tall one was I forget what. And let me tell you, when Tiki came by later in the afternoon, he had some words for me about letting strangers into his yard.
Exactly.
He used up all his pee. He was going around, marking all the spots where they had been, and he ran out. It was like drip.
And not just nothing but a whistle.
So anyway, Eric and Anita love listening to Deep Thinking.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that Eric discovered it and introduced Anita to him.
I like to think the other way around.
And the podcasts come around on Tuesday.
Right.
And Eric hates Tuesdays worse than Monday.
Really?
Yeah, like Monday, you know it's the beginning of the week. You're prepared for it. You know you got to make it eight hours.
Right.
And he says, but Tuesday's like not even Wednesday yet. It's just as bad as Monday. So they developed a thing where they have champagne on Tuesdays.
I like it.
Every Tuesday.
That's pretty cool.
And one of them buys champagne. Sometimes both of them buy champagne. And so they brought us Hickory Farm style snacks because we're paying for that all the time. And then they also added the champagne thing. So they've upped the standard.
Maybe there is a benign ruler of the universe. Maybe we're doing something right, Ed.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Or
Or
they're nervous that I'm going to not do good work, and they're trying to bribe me.
Or we're about to get hit by a meteor to balance everything out, right?
So,
skablam!
However, we are not going to drink the champagne while we're making the show.
I'll drink.
Neither do I. Like, if I have half a glass of champagne, I'm like, whoa, already. And I don't think Drunk Ed is going to make a very good... I already don't have much inhibitions as it is, right? I think we just don't want to find out.
When we're done with the Hawk, we'll not break the bottle of champagne over the front of it.
I do think that's a great picture. Like, remember school, you had to, like, do art? And you'd have to draw a vase on a table with a window in the background.
Right.
This could be one of those pictures, except Hickory Farms champagne and a race bike on a stand.
And
right?
A gorgeous rear end on this race bike. It's single-sided swing arm, pit bull stand.
Single-sided swing arm from an engineering point of view.
It's a disaster.
Unbelievable.
But who cares?
None of the single-sided swing arm people seem to care at all.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I know some jackass who put a single-sided swing arm on a bike that didn't come with one.
I did that twice.
Who might that be?
But that was for the express purpose of making endurance rear wheel changes faster.
Yep.
That was before there were all these other trick ways to do it.
Got it.
I have to admit, though, the second one was kind of because I could.
Two things. Number one, Mike Webb, the race director, quote-unquote race director at MotoGP, actually does have apparently a road racing background. I have been, because we're still kind of the off season, not a lot of racing going on, still going through old races on YouTube. I found a 6-hour race in New Zealand where he was on a team. I think they put it on the podium. So this also explains a number of the reasons for his boneheaded freaking decisions. When he was racing in the 80s on an FZR 1000, he was racing on tracks where there were walls right against the edge of the track. No big deal. Everybody just went at it. People were running into each other. It was a disaster. The other thing was
just because you did something
back in the 80s,
you know, crazy back then, doesn't mean you still think it's the thing to do.
This is my point.
You can go two ways with that. You can say, yeah, that's fine. Or you can go, whoa,
that was
bad.
Insane, we learned something. Right? Maybe we should have learned something from that.
I think I'll use your example here to segue into the change they just made to the rider point system in MotoGP.
Hold on. I got one more thing. I just wanted to point out, because you were talking about endurance race and tire changes. That race, the guys on a ZX-10, back when the ZX-10 was a boat, led the whole frickin' race, and it was productions for production bikes, and they lost because the axle got hung up on the rear wheel during their last tire change. It took them 4.5 minutes to do the tire change. Ugh! They lost by like less than 30 seconds.
That's one of the neat things about endurance racing, right?
Yeah.
Everything's important.
Everything is important. Yeah. Okay, point system in MotoGP.
So after the end of the season, they tweaked it a little bit.
Right.
Because they realized that guys would go back to zero or something after they served their penalty, right? Now they tweaked it again to have some kind of, you got to get 10 points.
Right.
No penalty
up to 10 points. And then after that, you miss a race.
Oh, you miss a whole race.
Yeah.
So they made the nuclear option instead of the
there's no increment.
Right.
There's no increment.
Because miss a race is huge.
That's a big deal. Yeah. But, I mean, nobody has ever gotten 10 penalty points.
Yeah. And it reset after a year to zero?
I don't even know.
I know it resets after you get 10.
The
thing about this is, right, it's all tweakable, right? Because there's no set number of points you get for a given penalty.
Right.
You do this thing, if you do something bad enough, they could theoretically say, okay, 10 points.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And really, this is the only thing you can do, right? You're trying to discipline a bunch of two-year-olds with money and power, right? And you have to be able to say, well, we're trying to do something. Because there's this group of people that are saying, hey, you got to do the right thing. And there's this other powerful group of people that are saying, well, you got to do the right thing to their guy, but not to our guy.
Right.
And you got to try to come up with some kind of balance. I do not envy the guy who has to decide how many points each infraction is worth.
You know what?
You're setting that guy up to be the bad guy.
There's an easier way to do it. And
of course there's an easier way to do it, but it's political, man. There's an easier way to run a country. Look at what we're going through.
The whole points thing is the problem. This whole idea of points is the problem, and it's all because, and again, I don't want to bust
Presto, you're God. You're king. How would you do it?
Very simple. You do something booty-headed, you get a black flag or a ride-through. One or the other, end of discussion. If you do it during practice or qualifying, you start at the back of the grid.
That's great. But you can't do to the guy who's bringing millions of dollars in.
That's your problem.
Dude, you wanted professional racing.
Yeah.
That comes with it. It's not a problem. It's a good thing.
Yeah, good. I agree. It's generally a good thing.
So you now can't have a race where Marquez or Rossi or Lorenzo or really any of them is just not in the race unless they do something really, really bad.
Well, how are you going to... So what do? Just completely ignore what they've done?
What I say you do is you do what NASCAR does.
Which is?
I'm not sure exactly, and they do it so well. Well, that's the beauty of how well they do it.
That's brilliant.
Right?
Okay.
NASCAR has really stupid stuff like guys throwing punches in the pits.
Right.
But nobody ever connects on those punches. Nobody ever gets hurt. It's TV show. It's wrestling. And then they take the guys in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
and after they come out of the trailer, they all apologize on TV. There is some monetary penalty in their contracts that NASCAR has control over. That's what you got to do.
You don't pull them out of the race. You don't ban them from a race.
Well, just said you black
flag
them.
I said you black flag them.
Dude, you're going to have a riot.
Or ride through. You make them do a ride through. And what this does, by the way, is it prevents, because the penalty has to be immediately after the infraction.
Well, I agree.
You can't have that 2-week negotiation.
I agree. The problem with the immediate thing is that it's a death penalty.
It's irrevocable.
If you make a mistake,
you can't give it back. Which means that you're going to be damn sure not to make a mistake as the rider if you are thinking of doing something sketchy.
Well, I agree. That's the problem, right? The responsibility has gone away from the rider.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those guys aren't... Some of those guys are behaving like they can do anything
now,
they want.
And now you can do anything and then let your lawyer sort it out later. You
that's
can't
no
do
good.
That. But it is that the whole monetary penalty thing, that's pro sports, most of them, okay? There's a lot of criticism of Dorna for the way that they handled the post-Sepang MotoGP race issue last year, in that they canceled the news conference. They should have made them kiss and make up right there, all three of them, some big, you know, Spanish, Italian, Crisco love fest, okay? And that is a phrase you'll never forget, nor will our listeners.
It's been done.
Yeah, it needed to be handled then and there. It has to be immediate, just like in Formula One.
Well, I agree with you, but you're going for the Bernie Sanders magic, the world is perfect.
Who is Bernie Sanders guy?
Solution, and that's not possible.
Okay.
What I'm saying is what is possible, what I hope they've done, is they've found some back rooms, we're going to keep it secret when we cut your finger off thing that makes, all I care about is that they behave on the track.
Right.
Right?
Yeah,
I don't
do whatever they
how
want
they them. Make them behave on the track, that's
and
all
the,
I care.
The other, one other thing I'm going to add about this, there's been a lot of people who have, in the wake of this new ruling, or this new decision, say, well, riders are not allowed to make statements detrimental to the series.
Every series has that
kind of
rule.
And but what they're saying is, well, does that mean Rossi couldn't have criticized Marquez? No.
Yeah,
that's perfectly acceptable. It's when Rossi starts talking about the Spanish conspiracy, when he starts pointing to the CEO of Dorna in public and saying, I want to see you in my motorhome. You know, that's the sort of thing that undercuts the credibility.
Well, hold
on.
What
it
undercuts anybody is when they try to say you can't say something. Well, you need to snip that problem sooner than that. You need to take that guy on the side and explain to him in private. You don't need to make a rule for that bullshit. If I have to make a rule that says you can't walk out on the racetrack and pour oil on the track, I shouldn't be in charge.
But I'll bet it's in there. You know, and the point is that's the reason that clause is in there in all professional sports, is that you can't damage the product. Handbags at 10 paces at dawn between riders, awesome. Okay,
but you know, you don't... it's not only motorcycling that has this problem. The NFL has this problem.
Basketball.
In the form of spouse abuse, right?
We've
got it easy compared to some of these places.
Right.
So the takeaway, the positive from this is that they're trying to figure something out.
Right.
It's a difficult solution. It's easy for us to sit here and say you should this and you should that.
Yes, it's very easy because we're right, Ed. Everybody should be listening to us. Why isn't your phone ringing right now?
The result,
Carmelo,
we're doing it. No, look, you got, okay, mistakes were made that led to this problem.
Right.
Okay, we're sorry about those mistakes, but now we got to deal with
Now we got to do
something. Now we're in this world. We have to fix this problem.
Right.
We can't make Mexico pay for the problem. We have to deal with it ourselves.
What? How did Mexico get involved in this? I am a little hungry, come to think about it. Speaking of, is it time for us to do our MotoGP predictions for 2016?
Dude, the only prediction that anybody can, that anybody, if anybody says anything more than it's going to be an unbelievable season, okay, and unpredictable shit's going to happen. That, and if you say more than that, you're a big fat liar.
I'm a big fat liar. Well, then I'm ready to make a prediction.
Lorenzo looks pretty strong.
Lorenzo looks amazing.
Now, Honda looks like, uh-oh.
No, not really.
Well, okay, at the very, very end, Marquez said, "We see the light at the end of the tunnel now." And he saw the light while he was following Lorenzo. That's not the same as working out their problem.
Did you see the race simulations, the long runs? On the long runs, Marquez and Lorenzo are right there.
Yes, Marquez was following Lorenzo for most of that.
No. I'm just,
yes, he was.
No, I'm not talking about what happened on the track. I'm looking at the times.
Yes, they were on the track doing a long run together.
Honda actually is stronger than it looks at this point.
Hope so, because they look pretty damn bad.
I couldn't agree more. Let me rephrase that. The Honda-Marquez combination looks a lot, better.
And that points to a problem. Just like how Suzuki has one rider doing well and one rider doing poorly, that's great for their one rider. But it means that there is something going on.
Crutchley didn't look too bad on the bike until it, and I quote, torpedoed him in the nuts, which was his statement. And by the way, Ed, let me ask you this. Would the phrase torpedoed me in the nuts be considered a comment detrimental to the nature of the sport?
You see, because this is an example of why you can't have those kind of rules.
I got a little wincy when I heard that, right?
Actually, what I heard him say was that he could have saved it, but he hit the curb.
Okay.
And then it flicked him and then hit me in a delicate part or something that.
Torpedoed me in the nuts is what he told the Brits. And he said, this is the other one. Are you ready?
Well, you've got to talk to the Brits differently.
Strap in. He said, I had to get an ultrasound on my bollocks. Okay, that nearly made me pass out.
That's not good.
That's not good at all. Yeah. That guy's put. Does he marry girlfriend? I forget which it is. That poor fucker broke both wrists a couple of years ago.
So at the same time.
Yeah. So he couldn't wipe his own ass.
Yeah.
Now his balls are broken.
Actually, I had a girlfriend who broke both wrists at the same time, and that resulted in me moving in early. And I'm like, you know, I'll do it, right? But she locked herself in the bathroom and figured out a way to do it herself.
Paper,
but did it herself. He was not going to have, if she was down with, you know, helping her bathe, feeding her, but she was going to wipe her own
line,
ass.
Drew the line there.
I think there's a lot of people that have
probably
drawn
the line
place.
There. Yeah. All right. So here's my prediction. Okay. I think it all depends on two things. Weather.
This is called waffling, folks.
Yeah, it's not waffling at all. I think
it depends on weather. Oh, gee. Well, you're going out on a limb there.
I think it's going to depend on weather and track conditions and the Michelin tires. If those tires relax.
You had to come to deep thinking to hear it, folks.
Breathe,
we said it first.
Breathe, it'll be okay.
Wait, does it maybe depend on how well the bike works, too?
No, not really.
How about if any riders get sick or injured?
Not so much.
How about losing their minds? If they go crazy, would that make a difference?
When's the last time one of them broke a collarbone?
That is a much more rare
airbags. Airbag suits. Yeah. They're just amazing.
Well, and less shit to hit too.
Yeah. I mean, let's be fair. No doubt. So, I'm thinking. If the tires will stay relatively stable for an entire race distance, which we're not really sure about.
Yeah, nobody's been able to do full sims. Isn't that amazing?
Uh huh.
You think like 3 test days of 3 days each.
At some point,
our own level of testing. They're like, did you go testing?
I went. Exactly.
I went to last year's race, so I'm ready. Right, and these guys, and they still didn't have time to do
no,
a race.
Michelin didn't show up with the medium.
No, I know there's a million reasons why. It's just you wouldn't predict, right?
Right. So if the tires remain stable the entire race distance and the track conditions are anywhere near normal, nobody's going to see Lorenzo.
Oh my God, that guy is going to.
It's going to be doing S.
It's like Lorenzo has been what? Squared is by 2.
Cubed.
Lorenzo's been cubed.
Yeah. If conditions are normal, I don't think anybody's going to see which way he went.
The more perfect that tire requires, the even better.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But if anything goes weird.
Oh, yeah. He's going to go to 12th.
And I think it'll be Marquez. And here's why. Okay.
Well, if you want to bet on a guy who can ad lib as the race is going on, right?
And who's
except he didn't ad lib very well last year. But you know what?
He only won five races at
Thorne. But he crashed out of it. He got zeros.
Yeah, right? Exactly, because he was trying to win.
I think he learned that last year. I think he knows now that sometimes second, third, even fifth is good enough.
And here's the other thing that that I haven't seen anybody else post, and it's an exclusive to Deep Thinking.
When you put your hands over your mouth, people can't understand you.
It's supposed to sound like that. Sunday. Who's the only one of the aliens who's been on a Moto2 bike? Marquez. And that thing has no electronics on it whatsoever. All that crazy shit he was doing in Moto2, okay? None of the other guys have done that.
No, I agree. You know what I mean? The thing is that Marquez has looked downtrodden and in serious trouble all the way up until the last three laps of testing. And then you're like, oh yeah, he's going to be all good.
No,
three laps don't make a good season.
But what I'm saying is if Lorenzo falters, I think he's
going to... The thing is, Lorenzo's not going to falter.
But if conditions or tires or something like that causes him to have that problem...
You know, we're not going to know anything until at least three quarters of the way of the second race.
That's the joy of the predictions,
Ed. What I'm saying is it's just unbelievable.
I'm going to be gloriously wrong. But I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, that's
you know, because being wrong and
I tell you what Suzuki is going to make for some awesome show cheering.
I don't know.
They're going to
be. I don't know.
The
race pace wasn't that good, Ed. They're great. They're crazy for one lap. It's like the Ducatis, crazy for one lap.
Yeah, no, they're going to be in the hunt. They've made huge improvements. Ducati's plan of having lots of bikes, the shotgun approach, is going to pay.
It looks good. They always look
and
good.
And Aprilia
at
is going to do a respectable job this year.
No, I think Ducati always looks good at Qatar. I think they flatter to deceive.
Well, guess what? The first race is
at Qatar. Right. Yes. That's fine. And
whatever they did last year to do great at Qatar and then not so good the rest of the year, they have that data now.
Yeah,
and so they're going to do better.
Have you noticed that the 14 and the 15 seems to be doing better than the 16? Yamaha shelved their 16.
Okay, you can't say that on one hand, Marquez having three or four good laps at the very end is this all good thing, and then ignore that Ducati did the same thing.
I can do whatever I want.
You're just picking the information you want.
That's
not called science, that's religion.
What I'm saying is...
So have you been listening to the sound of the bikes carefully?
No. Hold on, let me finish my sentence.
I've heard it 100 times.
At the end of the race,
he puts his hand out and he does like a circular stop.
Like a Obi-Wan thingy. Kenobi.
No,
these
it's
are not
more
the
like, no, it's more like the Supremes.
These are
stop
these are,
in the name of love.
Okay, at the end of the race,
it's too funny. Can't go on.
At the end of the race, when everything has gone completely weird, Marquez is the guy that you want on the bike. That's all.
Or Rossi.
Yeah, maybe.
Right. I mean, look at all of his all of his wins last year were from being the smart old cagey guy.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
You know. Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, right. If you're on a Yamaha this year, you're sitting pretty
at this
pretty
point.
Good.
Yeah.
Right.
You're doing really
for
well.
For sure, the most consistent.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, the only team with their two A guys at the front all the time.
The PlayStation bike.
Yeah.
The PlayStation
bike. Exactly.
Easy to ride means fast.
So I've been paying attention to the sound at all the tests.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is of all the bikes is still more ragged than last year, but it is noticeably better than round two of testing and way better than round one. So I'm pretty sure I'm right that sound is a good indication that they're understanding the electronics better and it's all getting better. So the other, I got a really serious prediction.
Okay.
That there is going to be maybe three parts to the series. There's going to be the beginning, the middle, and the end this year, and in the beginning... It's when you're going to have this big change.
Are you willing to put money on that, Ed, that there's going to be three?
So what I mean is last year, Yamaha's bike was pretty much their bike. It didn't change much from the beginning. It got a little bit better after, three rounds,
mm-hmm.
right? But most of that appearance improvement was that Lorenzo just had personal problems at the first couple races.
Right.
The bike was pretty much consistent.
Mm-hmm.
This year, all the bikes are going to have...
Interesting.
It's stepping, right? Because there's still so many... Nobody knows what the... One of the things that they wanted to do that Michelin wanted the riders to do at Phillip Island was to do a complete race simulation. By complete, I mean go out for a warm-up lap. The guy even said, stop on the grid,
mm-hmm.
do a launch exactly, and they don't have anywhere near that from anybody. And the fact that they wanted that to happen means that they have a question, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Down to the detail of does it do, and they don't know the answer to that yet, right? So there's going to be big changes to the tires and the electronics in the first part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be a, okay, we're consolidating that in the middle part of the season. And then there's the guys who get it all worked out perfect for this
last half.
So I think you're going to see multiple changes in who the front runner is, unless Lorenzo just checks out on everybody for every freaking round.
I think that's why Honda looks so bad in testing, and that's why they look so good right at the very end. It's because there's stuff that you can't touch once the season starts.
Yeah, and they're going bonkers trying
everything. You've got to fix that. And then, and only then, do you mess with electronics. You can build as many frames as you want.
Except if your theory is completely right.
It is.
Both riders would have made a big improvement in the last little bit, and Pedrosa did not.
I think at this point, if you're Yamaha, you build the bike for Lorenzo. If you're Honda, you build the bike for Marquez.
Doesn't it suck to be the B guy?
Oh my God, right? Here you go. Exactly. I'm done with your wife. Here you go. All yours now, right? Oh God. Speaking of which, and let's go ahead and wrap this one up. I think, where are we at on time?
25.
We don't want to do any
more singing. You were going to do 2-minute board on the Swedish guy.
Oh, the Swedish guy. Let's talk about the Swedish guy. But before Peter we talk Linden. About the Swedish guy, MV Agusta, you talked about the bike being where it is and that being a good or a bad thing. What's his name? Leon Camier is riding the MV Agusta in World Superbike this year. Okay. Did really reasonably well at Phillip Island. Was like in the top 5 in one of the practice sessions. And he said something that was really cool on Friday after practice. Because it's a one bike team, fairly minimally funded. He said, this is what we've got. We're not developing anything else. This is what I'm racing with. But there's an advantage to that. You're not thinking, well, I'm just going to stroke it and wait for the new chassis to show up. I'm not going to, wait for the next electronics upgrade.
There is an advantage to that, but your bike needs to be competitive.
Competitive,
for it to be a fun advantage.
Right. And it's just, but it was just like one of those things, and he did really well in the race.
Well, but except there's this guy I know. I keep talking to him, I don't know why, at least once a week, who likes to go on about how Phillips Island is an outlier and doesn't mean
abnormal
anything.
Abnormal and all that.
Yeah.
All I'm
convenient
saying,
how you can forget that stuff when you want to make a point.
It's a point broader than Phillip Island. And the point is that if you are a club racer, you're not going to get miraculously better by throwing away your Penske and putting in an Ohlins. You're not going to, drop 4 seconds a lap by going from DOT racing tires to slicks or from slicks to DOTs.
Well, club racers are all limited by themselves.
Exactly.
Not by
spend
the bike.
Spend the time on the track.
Spend all you want. You go the same speed.
Yep. Spend the time on the track. That's how you'll get better.
Guy, 2-minute board.
Peter Linden, a 2-minute board. I have a book. I got 2 books now, Ed.
Yeah, you told me that. You gotta read them.
A World Endurance. It's a book about the World Endurance championship and endurance racing. And there's a guy named Peter Linden. I think he was the 2000 World Endurance Champion or co-champion, because sometimes the guys on the team all get the same number of points. He's from Sweden. And the cool thing is, this is the best abuse of taxpayer money I've ever heard of anywhere. Okay? He's a pilot with the Swedish Royal Air Force. And every now and then during the races, his buddies would come and buzz the pits in their fighter jets.
Excellent.
I just thought that was so cool.
And would you like to know what fighter jet that is?
Yes, because Ed looked it up.
Well, I recognized it when you sent me the picture. It's a JAS-39 Gripen.
Right.
Which is made by a consortium of Swedish companies, Saab being the leader of them.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, Sweden has been doing such a fantastic job in the jet age. So immediately after World War II, they built a fighter, and they called it the Barrel, because it had a barrel shape. If you look a picture of it, you'll understand.
Okay.
And it was probably the best jet at the time. And since then, their jets that they've been building just for themselves, tiny little country, tiny little economy, few guys working on the project, have been competitive and sometimes better than the jets built by us and the Russians and everybody else.
They took the whole
thing. And they're so good that everybody doesn't talk about them because they don't want them to get their ass kicked.
Well, they took the whole thing seriously. Their highway system.
Yep.
The big parts of their highway system are actually runways.
Yep. Well, and that's a really neat idea, right? People think, oh, that's cool, they got extra runways. No, it's not just that. Think about it, if you're trying to target my runways, now you all of the highways.
Yeah, exactly.
Because only some of them are actually used for this.
Right.
I don't know that.
Right.
Right.
Don't
you
know
have
which
to bomb
ones.
Them all.
You know.
And here's an engineer thing.
Right.
I can set up beautiful traps for your airplanes that are trying to come to attack
yeah.
my road that's not really a runway.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get 7 or 8 of your planes maybe in one go for no risk for me.
There's something
anyway.
Else that happens too. First off,
well, they invent
they've
great
only
technology.
Got like four, for the... They've only got 4 hours of daylight.
Yeah.
Okay, on any given day. So their engineers have nothing better to do than build
around.
Really cool shit. Have you seen the movie Dead Snow?
No.
Awesome. Nazi zombies in Sweden.
Shit. What is the draw about zombies?
I don't know.
It's not possible. Yeah. Check this out. So how do the Swedes make it affordable to make these jets with their small economy?
No clue.
They have one airplane frame.
Right.
And they make it do everything.
Right.
So first you build an air superiority fighter.
Right.
And then you modify it a tiny bit, put another seat in it, and it's a trainer.
Right.
You modify it a little bit, and it's a reconnaissance plane. You modify it a little bit, and it can drop bombs. Right. But you got one plane, whereas we have multitude of planes to do all these different jobs.
Plus.
And sure, they do that job a little bit better than this one plane that's trying to do them all.
Right.
But this way you can put all your development into one plane,
to look at
and the cost per unit goes way down.
You have to look at the Swedish economic model. They make a lot of money on exporting blondes. Okay.
Look at me.
And he is Ed Sorbo.
And he's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.